What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Factory Report. I'm Luke Gremman.
And I'm Caleb Burlingame.
And today we're going to be doing an NBA deep dive with special guest Charles Post. This is the Factory Report. Quick news coming out of the NFL today. Jaguars running back Leonard Fournette was released and signed by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Fournette was drafted number 4 overall in 2017. Another report from Adam Schefter states that Miami Dolphins quarterback Josh Rosen is on the trading block. According to Cameron Eberle of the Eastern Echo, the esports organization Gen G is parting with Eastern Michigan, Kentucky, and other schools by committing $1 million to a new scholarship fund for esports. The pledge has a commitment of $100,000 annually for 10 years. The fund will be used to support women, people of color, and low-income students who want to major in gaming and esports. Check out the full article at easternecho.com. Now with the quick news out of the way, it's my very great pleasure to introduce a friend of mine, former sports editor, Charles Post. Charles, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Great to have you on. Now, you used to be the sports editor for The Echo. How long did you work there?
So I worked from the Echo from 2016 to 2019, mm-hmm. and for the last about a year and a half, I was sports editor.
Sports editor? Okay.
And, yeah. And then you took over my job as sports editor in April of 2020. Yeah. But so I run from 2016 to early 2020.
What was your, what do you think was the most interesting story you came across in your time or your tenure?
While with the Echo?
Yeah.
I think my favorite story was probably when I got to interview Earl Boykins. That was the first NBA player that I was able to talk to while working with Echo. So just, you know, having the EMU connection, that was really exciting. I think that was probably my favorite one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What are you up to now, Charles?
Up to now, not much during quarantine. I am writing for Scarlet and Game. And then when high school sports get going again, hopefully in a few weeks, I'll be writing for We Love Ann Arbor.
That's awesome.
Scarlet Game, what's that?
Scarlet Game, it's a sub-community of fan-sided, but they cover Ohio State sports. So right now I'm covering Ohio State basketball, football, and recruiting.
Oh, you're writing in the dark country.
The dark
country.
Yep. Exactly. While I am a heavy Michigan fan, I will say, folks, that I have read a couple of Charles's articles for Scarlet Game, and it is very well written. Charles is very talented, and that's hard for me to say as a Michigan fan. Because it is about Ohio State, but I will say Charles is very talented. Go check it out.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm a Michigan fan too.
it must be hard. Right?
Yeah, so it's hard for me to write them.
All right, now let's jump into the main topics for today. So we wanted to start off with a little piece that Caleb wanted to talk about. Caleb, take it away.
Oh my goodness! If in case you guys have been under a rock, Milwaukee is now down 3-0 on the Miami Heat. And if you look back about a month and a half ago, Luke and I had an episode where I called the Miami Heat upsetting the Milwaukee Bucks. So I just want to take that for a second and kind of just bask in me saying, and they could come back. Milwaukee could come back. But if we're looking back to game two, the reffing at the end of that game was some of the worst reffing I've ever seen in my entire life. And let me run you through kind of what happened, the main thing that happened. So with under 10 seconds left, Miami's up 3 points, and the refs call an absolutely phantom three-point shooting foul that sent Chris Middleton to the line, and he, of course, it's Chris Middleton. He tied up the game, hit all three free throws. The guy that was defending him didn't even touch him. He was straight up, and they called the foul. It was insane. So that in itself is poor reffing. And then Jimmy Butler, he has a few seconds left to come win the game. On the final possession, Jimmy takes a fadeaway mid-ranger with Giannis on him. And the refs call another phantom call to make up for the one they just did to send Jimmy Butler to the line to where he wins the game with 0 seconds left. This was absolutely insane. In both situations, the shooter did not get touched at all. And even in the replay, the shooter was not touched. It was absolutely insane. What did you guys think of that?
I could not believe what I was seeing. Now, the best part was Doris Burke. She was the color commentator for this game. She freaking flamed out. I was just like, how is that a foul? How is that a foul? And the main announcer was like trying to be, you know, he's trying to be
impartial,
you know, middle of the road. But she was like, no, that's absolutely, that's total BS, basically. He was It was amazing. I mean, like, I hated to watch it, but it was fun to hear it at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely, it actually doesn't surprise me though. I feel like every postseason or every few weeks in the postseason, we get, you know, one or two games where it just seems like the refs completely take it over. And that's how we remember that game.
I think,
and I mean, I feel like we're not going to remember game two for much outside of how it finished. And the refs, I feel like, kind of took that away from the players.
I completely agree with you there. You hit it right on the nail on the head. And it's extremely important because now Miami went up 2-0, which is a commanding lead. And eventually now has led to them being up 3-0, which is, let me plug this stat here. The NBA posted yesterday that no team has ever, ever in the history of the NBA come back from a 3-0 deficit.
There it is.
So,
So do you think there's a chance?
Oh, it's Giannis. There's always a chance, but
I don't know. 4-0, that would be tough.
It's extremely slim. I mean, we saw LeBron come back from 3-1 against the 73-9 Warriors, but is Giannis LeBron? It's hard to say.
Here's the difference between LeBron with a 3-1 and a team in the playoffs with a 3-0. When you're a team in the playoffs, first of all, you're exhausted. Just you're always exhausted at this point in the season.
Yeah.
You're always exhausted. I know that these players haven't had the grueling 82 game schedule, but they're still going to be exhausted. Not only that, but there is so much mental damage that's done when you're down 3-0. You have to claw back and win every single game with no mess ups at all, basically.
Yeah, there's no room for error at all.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really straining on players. It's really difficult to do. That's probably the main reason why you haven't seen a team come back. And Giannis is incredibly talented, but I don't know if that's going to matter if the entire team is just shot mentally.
And here's what I think is the kiss of death is, yes, Giannis is great, but the Heat know how to stop him. All he can do is drive, maybe hit a couple mid-rangers. He's great, but the Heat have his number. And Chris Middleton's been spotty as a backup player, but for Giannis to carry the load for 4 straight games when the Heat already know how to stop him, I don't see them getting all 4 games. The Heat will pull one out somehow, you know. So Chaz asked if I think they have a chance. It's very slim, but there's always a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I give them a chance, but it's very slim. I just think that Miami has way too many defenders that can guard Giannis.
Agreed.
And I think that, and as much as I do like Giannis and I think he's a great player, I don't think that his game is very versatile, his offensive game. I think that when it comes down to it, he's pretty limited. Just like you said, how he can get to the rim, it's really one or two things. Mm-hmm. He went 0 for 7 from 3 last night in game 3. Maybe if he hits 1, 2, 3 of those and they're right in that game. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. He's just not at that point in his career. I'm not sure if he's going to get there where he's a consistent 3-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see them coming back in this series. They might win a game or two, but it's hard to imagine 4 in a row.
Yeah,
I completely agree. Being from Michigan, though, all 3 of us, we are very used to getting the short end of the stick, reffing, draft picks, anything. We're so used to it that it's just mind-numbing at this point. You look back at the Lions and the Cowboys in the playoffs a few years ago, that made me almost die of pure insanity how one-sided the reffing was in that game. Looking back to this year, the Pistons getting the 7 pick despite having the 4th worst record in the league. What is that? Why do the Pistons always get trashed in the lottery?
Like, every Detroit team just gets beat down by things outside of themselves. And maybe like we're crying and whining, but it just seems to happen too many times. And going back to the Lions with Dallas, that was disappointing. But the thing that broke me was the year after that when the Lions were playing Seattle. And
Monday Night Football.
Yeah, Monday Night Football. That was a game I was so hyped to watch. And then we just got absolutely screwed. If you don't know what happened, look it up, please. It's absolutely terrifying.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
And I've been looking at mock drafts for the past 4 or 5 months of who the Pistons could possibly take. And they're so limited now at 7. This is an extremely talented draft. But if you look at them being in the top 4, you're looking at them maybe getting Obi Toppin, maybe getting, not really, but maybe LaMelo Ball, maybe Anthony Edwards if he drops, or James Wiseman. You're getting one of those 4 players if they're in the top 4. And those 4 players are potential franchise-changing players. And then outside of that, you're at the lower echelon of who you're picking from. It's terrible.
Yeah. I think the best-case scenario for the Pistons actually would be if Killian Hayes fell to them at 7.
Yeah, they do need
If they don't get Killian Hayes, then then it's not good. I think this draft is pretty, maybe like you said, 4 or 5 good players, but mm-hmm. yeah.
After that, it just kind of drops off into players who are good, but not yeah. franchise altering like the Pistons desperately need.
Yeah. Yeah. The Pistons need the go-to guy, and I don't know if they're going to get that with the 7th pick.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right, now with the reffing talk out of the way, let's talk about the NBA first round. So we have a couple questions to talk about teams that got bounced early. So these would be teams like Philadelphia, the Nets, and let's see.
Brooklyn. Oh, yeah, you said Brooklyn.
Yeah. Brooklyn Nets and the Jazz. So
okay.
First question, I think this is the elephant in the room for the NBA. What is the future of Philly? Specifically, do you guys think that Joel Embiid is going to go elsewhere?
I think – you don't mind if I go first, right?
Yeah, yeah, you go first. Guest okay, goes first.
All right. I think – I don't think Embiid leaves this offseason. Mm-hmm. Maybe next season, but I think that they're going to try and bring back Ben Simmons healthy, Embiid next year, and then bring in a new coach after they fired Brett Brown and mm-hmm. maybe give it one more go. But if it's not successful next year, if they get eliminated in the first round or even the second round next year, then I think they're probably going to blow it up. And at that point, they'd have to trade either Embiid or Simmons. And that's for them to make that decision. I think mm-hmm. I would personally side with Simmons, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's what I think. It's just so hard with losing your head coach. And I think the morale level in Philly is so low right now. Just to bring something up, Joel Embiid posted the other day on Instagram. I don't remember the exact thing he said, but he said like a new chapter or the journey moves on or something. And then the other day, Jimmy Butler posted on Instagram a picture of him and Joel hugging. And he said, I know a place where villains are welcome. And Joel Embiid commented something like, hell yeah, brother, I'm coming, or something of that nature. So maybe Joel Embiid to the Heat, that would be a super team right there.
That would be. I wonder what they would have to give up in order to get him.
Exactly.
Yeah. And would it be worth giving a Bam? I think that's a hard decision.
I don't think so.
Especially with like, so Joel Embiid, he's a really good player, but if you really think about it, his value isn't all that good because he gets injured all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you sit down and you say, what are teams willing to give up for Joel Embiid? It's probably not as much as you think, mm-hmm. but when it comes to Embiid moving on, I do agree with Chaz that it won't happen this offseason, but I think next season, Philly's going to reach a boiling point. And I think it's going to be during the regular season if we have it. And I think you're going to see a meltdown within the team. And I'd rather side with Simmons myself. I think he's easier to play around and he's not injury prone. But you're going to see that boiling point get reached next season. Mark my words.
So you don't even think they make it to the playoffs?
Oh, man.
You think they have to get rid of Embiid before?
I don't know about not making the playoffs, but the team chemistry is going to get shot. And so they're going to have to make a decision in the middle of the season, basically.
That kind of reminds me of...
I can see that.
In 2018, the Cavaliers, when they blew up their season right before the trade deadline, they got rid of Isaiah Thomas... Dwayne Wade, all those players, and they completely changed up the squad because they said, this isn't working, we're going for a title. And then you look at that, and LeBron had to carry every single one of them to the finals in a very, very grueling first-round series against Indiana that went 7 games, and then a very grueling Eastern Conference Finals that went 7 games against the Celtics. That season took a lot of toll on LeBron, and if they're putting that on Ben Simmons with a bunch of role players that they try to throw together at the last minute, it could spell disaster, or it could work, but it just reminds me of the Cavs in 2018.
Yeah, you see.
I think.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Luke.
I was just about to say, like, they're. You see more and more of their talent just getting picked apart, like J.J. Redick, or just think about Robert Covington specifically. Like, he's a huge contributor on the Rockets now, and he used to be on Philly, and he's just another player they kind of let slip through their fingers. And, it's just tough to see them still succeeding even without those role players who put up big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So staying on the topic of Philly, do you guys, to kind of zoom it out to more of a macro level, do you guys think that the process itself is toast?
Chaz, you can take this first, buddy.
Yeah.
Toast in terms of what?
Is do you think it done? Yeah, do you think it's shot? Do you think it worked, succeeded, or failed? Like, how do you, looking back, now that we're potentially nearing the tail end of it, how do you feel about it?
In totality, I feel like it's a little, I feel like it was successful, but it was obviously underwhelming at the same time. I think to get two of these generational type of talents with Simmons and Embiid, just drafting them was, a successful move by the management. But in terms of postseason success, it hasn't exactly translated to that. I mean, their biggest achievement is taking the Raptors to Game 7. Mm-hmm. And although I am a big fan of Embiid and Simmons, that's not exactly something to hang your hat on, you know, as a career. So, mm-hmm. Overall, it's just been kind of, I don't know, it's just, it doesn't seem like it's really been a success or a fail. It's just been something kind of in the middle that, you know, has been kind of fun to watch at times and then has been awful to watch at times too. So, I don't know.
Just like the Lions.
Yeah, it's really been a confusing last, 4 or 5 seasons, I feel like, for Philly.
It was a fun idea, the process.
Yeah.
But I think Philly got it a little wrong. And I'll tell you why. Is in today's NBA, you got to have shooters. Your best players have to shoot the three ball, and they got to shoot it well. I mean, look at Giannis. We're talking about that. He can't shoot the three ball. Bucks are struggling. Joel Embiid, he can shoot it. It's pretty good, but he's more of a traditional big man that likes to stay inside, get blocks, post hooks, stuff like that. And as we all know, Ben Simmons is one of the worst three-point shooters ever. So when your best two players both have their game centered on getting to the rim and playing pretty good defense, that's really hard to succeed in today's NBA. Look at the Golden State Warriors. They thrive so well because they shot the three better than anyone in history. And that's why the 76ers failed, in my opinion, is they didn't have their star players that could shoot the three ball.
Mm-hmm. You think it was just personal drafting? Do you think that was the issue?
That, and Ben Simmons could shoot in college, and now somehow, some way, his three-pointer failed. And look at Markelle Fultz. He was a great shooter in college, and then he comes to the 76ers and can't do anything.
He's got fluid in his arm, and he can't do anything.
It's like, it makes me think, who is the shooting coach for Philly? And why can't they get their guys to shoot the ball well?
Yeah. Just imagine if they would have drafted Tatum, though, instead of Fultz. We could be having a totally different conversation.
Totally different conversation.
Yeah.
But Fultz is tearing it up in Orlando right now.
Yeah, but Tatum, I don't know. I think Tatum might be an MVP-level player in a year or two.
Agreed. I can agree with that.
Yeah, Tatum, missing out on Tatum is basically the death note for Philly. But I think their problems really extend farther back from that. So,
yeah.
I think the first problem was not sticking with Hinkie, the thinker of the whole process idea. Mm-hmm. Not sticking with him and getting impatient, then firing him, that was the first wrong step that they did. You have to stick with the process all the way through. I remember seeing that Philadelphia was only like a 10-win team, and then the next season they're a playoff team. I was like, whoa, what happened here? The potential was there, but it also comes down to what Cable was talking about, drafting. So first thing was that they fired Hanky too early. They didn't let him finish his job. Second was that their drafting was hit or miss at best. Now, and like you said, Embiid and Simmons, they're great players, but that's not necessarily the personnel or the pairing that you need to win. And there's a lot of other draft picks who have fizzled out as well. You mentioned Markelle Fultz. You know, he just sucked for the longest time.
He did.
And then the one that I really remember was, I think it's Jahlil Okafor.
Drafted him second overall, I think.
Yeah, he absolutely dominated in college, and now he's a journeyman, you know?
Exactly.
It's just too many, too late when it comes to bad picks.
I think they drafted Nerlens Noel too, right?
Oh, that's right.
He didn't turn out into anything.
Yeah.
No, their drafting really sucked. And
yeah, besides Simmons and Embiid, it seems like they missed on most of them. Maybe Fultz is the next one that could have been great, you know, if he was able to stay with the injuries and developed a little bit more. Yeah, but I don't know. Besides Embiid and Simmons, it's just they didn't have it, I guess.
I agree.
Absolutely. And I do think the process can still work, but when a team commits to this type of rebuild, you have to go all the way. And you have to draft well. Like a team like the Spurs. Like the Spurs, they kind of did their own process style thing where they'd take players like late in the draft, send them overseas, then kind of like develop them over there, then bring them back. So the process can work, I think. It just Philly just effed it up.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think it was a successful run for them?
This process
or no?
was an objective failure, because if you aren't winning stuff, in my book, you're a failure.
So do you think it would have been a success if they made one conference finals, or do you think they had to win a championship?
You have to win a championship. If you're going this long,
that's high expectations.
committing nearly 5 years to make just a rebuild, you have to win a championship. If you're saying to your fans, "Hey, we're doing this huge process, like 5 years or more." If you have a 3 to 5 year plan, you've got to say a championship's on the other side. And if it isn't, then you should be fired. So, yeah, it's if you're not in it to win it, then why are you in it, bro? Like, yeah. we don't play no games. I'm
Talk
trying to get
rings.
No. I'm realistic. I don't play games with people. You're either winning or you aren't. So, get me some rings, boy. But yeah.
It sounds like they need to blow it up then, maybe.
Yeah, no, probably like you said, give it one more season and then kind of. Well, actually, I don't know, because. It makes you wonder, how can you get the best value for someone like Embiid? If we're assuming that Embiid is going to be the odd man out, how do you maximize his potential? Because you don't want to potentially give him another season to get injured. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the offseason or whatever would be the optimal time to release him.
I feel like right before the draft, maybe, because then maybe you could trade Embiid for a top five pick or something like that.
Get some picks. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure one team would be willing to give up a top five pick for Embiid. So
I can see that.
I don't know. Maybe you could look at that and then try and pair that pick with someone that actually works well with Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's say someone that needs a big man has like the third pick, and let's say Wiseman and Toppin are off the board. Totally trade that. There's no more big man on you for the board to get. Trade for Embiid and get him.
Sorry. I meant trade Embiid next.
Next year. Draft. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I got what you mean. My bad, folks.
No.
Can you guys think of like any teams that would potentially be in the market?
The Rockets, if they do play small ball.
Who needs a big man like that?
I think off the top of my head, I want to say Toronto, because they had Gasol, but he's gone. Serge is getting pretty old.
They have Pascal Siakam.
Yes. I don't know what their cap structure is and stuff like that, but He seems like he would fit there well in terms of they've got a really good bench, they've got good shooters, they can make things work.
I can see that.
Yeah, I can see that too.
Like I said, the Rockets, if they didn't play small ball and weren't so dedicated to their small ball, they definitely need a center. I mean, they run with PJ Tucker at the center right now, so
yeah. Dude, how about that? Did you guys watch the Rockets game? I think it was Rockets Clips, right? Or no, Rockets Lakers.
Rockets Lakers.
Yeah,
last night,
that?
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. The thing that impressed me the most was the Rockets rebounding. Like, they were all committing to the rebound. And I think Mark Jackson brought this up. Every time there was a rebound, there was around four Rockets crashing the glass. And you had Anthony Davis in there, but it's difficult. Even if you're taller than everybody, obviously it's a rebound if there's four people around you. So I think that commitment was something that probably, first of all, they won't get credit for it because, you know, James Harden can't play defense, is lazy, whatever. And that kind of rubs off, that stigma kind of gets rubbed off on the entire team. But they were neck and neck in terms of rebounds with the Lakers, which is really impressive.
Yeah, I think their defense, their effort, their rebounding has all been pretty elite so far in the playoffs. And that's not really something you expect to see from a James Harden-led Rockets team that we've seen in the last 5 years.
Especially with, like, that block that Harden had.
Against OKC.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's effort.
That was really impressive. Yeah.
I like that he let out that scream after, too.
He's very good player.
Yeah. He looked awful that game, actually, until that play.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't playing that well, but... You got to do what you got to do to get the job done.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what scares me?
Go ahead, Caleb.
You know what scares me for next season? Just how good the Brooklyn Nets are going to be.
Yeah, no, the Nets are going to be absolutely stoked when it comes to talent, at least, and with Steve Nash.
Chaz, what do you think of the Nets next year? Oh, I was asking you.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you guys feel about Nash, but I'll go first. I think that in the first day of the regular season, I think the Nets are already a top three team in the East. And from there on, they're probably going to get better. I'm excited to see how KD and Kyrie mesh together. I've never really seen – I mean, the closest thing we've probably seen to KD playing with a player like that is Steph. Mm-hmm. But obviously it's different because Steph is such an elite three-point shooter. A lot of people are kind of critiquing it and saying that it might not work out because they're both isolation-type players. But I actually think it's going to be great. I think they should be a top one or two seed, maybe a three seed if they have injuries or something. But I think they're a team that can get to the finals next season and probably beyond that.
They scare me for sure just because of their depth. Kyrie is a great player. He's coming off his whole year to get better from his injury and train. Same with KD, and KD is just a monster. We saw what he did with Golden State. And then you have a supporting cast of Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, who has balled out of his mind, DeAndre Jordan, Jared Allen, and then you have Steve Nash.
Joel Harris.
Joel Harris, exactly. Forgetting people that are so great. And then you have Steve Nash, the legendary point guard, Hall of Famer, leading them. Him and KD have trained in the past and have a very good relationship. And now you're having Steve Nash coach him and Kyrie. And Caris LeVert, oh my goodness. They're my favorite to win it all this year.
Really? Do you guys think that Nash pickup is the right decision?
I have no idea. I'm going to have to see how they play. Because, I mean, like, I don't know. Wasn't Nash part of the Phoenix 6-second offense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. An offensive mind is something you want to be in the NBA. Obviously, it's an offensive league. So, in terms of pedigree, I have faith in him. In terms of execution, I don't know. I don't know how good his coaching is, but I think he'll be able to, at least, I think he'll be able to get the players to play for him, which is half the battle, quite frankly, with coaching.
Yeah, you're not going to have any issue with, like, a player coming in and not respecting Steve Nash. You're not going to have any issues like that. It's just he's going to have the respect from the team, and I think it will work out. Like you said, I don't really know his X's and O's because we haven't seen him at that level, but – I don't know. I think the offense will be fine. I think maybe the defense will have issues. So I'm interested in seeing who they bring along as assistant coaches just to help with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think the Nets are definitely a championship contending team.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts about that. One, you said the assistant coach. Did you hear that Steve Nash asked Dirk Nowitzki to come assistant coach for him?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, it came out yesterday. He asked.
Did he say no?
Yes, he said no because it's too early into his retirement. Although he said later in his retirement he would be open to coaching. So I thought that was a cool little thing to add. And another thing that I think is underrated about this hiring is in the past, what have people criticized Kyrie Irving for? Not passing the ball and not getting enough assists at the point guard position. Steve Nash is one of the best assisting point guards of all time. If you let him kind of groom Kyrie into someone who can actually pass the ball better, get 6-7 assists a game, that could be really, really good for Kyrie Irving and really make his game more well-rounded.
Yeah, and I think he can do that because he's playing with KD. He's playing with probably more talent than he's ever had. So I think Kyrie's going to be at a high level next season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't have much else to add. You know, the only other concern with Kyrie is that he's sometimes a little bit flaky in terms of He can be interesting. He can be a diva. That's perfect. He's a wide receiver.
Maybe he can come off as a diva.
Yes, he is.
I don't know.
Occasionally,
I think I have a soft spot for Kyrie.
I do too. He's the first really, really great point guard besides Steph that I first watched. But occasionally, he can have the appearance of coming off as a diva, and I think that if you put him in a secure situation with a strong power structure in terms of Nash. And then I think KD would probably be the number one in terms of alpha dog in the locker room. It'd probably be KD and then Kyrie. Kyrie, I think, responds well to being number two. You know, if you just look at him and LeBron, their relationship, I think history would say that works well for them.
But
in
Kyrie
Boston,
left.
Yeah.
Kyrie left because he didn't want to be number two.
Yeah, but I think, but then there's the whole thing with that he went to the Celtics. Then he called LeBron and said, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." Yeah, I don't know what happened with that, but I think he kind of realized that
it's hard.
It's yeah. It's difficult, and I think that this would be a good situation for him.
I agree.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. All right. Last big question for the pod. Who is a better player, Donovan Mitchell or Jamal Murray? You saw in that series, ever since I believe it was game two, those two went at it back and forth, both of them just scoring bucket after bucket. Chaz, how do you feel about these two players?
That series was thrilling, honestly. I feel like I haven't seen the scores go like that for pretty much a whole series in a long time. Your initial question, though, I think Mitchell is the better player. But that's not to take anything away from Murray. I think he proved that in a few years he could be maybe a top 25 type of player, and that, you know, he's not too far off from that. I don't know. I think maybe both of their issue will be consistency. It's hard to do this day in and day out, but I think that's probably what really separates players from being superstars to like all-star level players. So if they can start doing this, you know, day in and day out and start averaging, if Mitchell or Murray can get up to 25, then at some point in their career, I wouldn't be surprised. These guys are, I think, two of the best scorers in the younger generation.
I agree. First of all, I'm going to do what I always do and say the Pistons could have had Donovan Mitchell, but they didn't. But that's another topic.
Pistons could have had Donovan Mitchell.
I'm never not going to mention that. And if I don't, and if I do not mention that, kill me because it's an alien. Anyway, so moving on to the question. I'm going to agree with Chaz that Donovan Mitchell is the better player, although Jamal Murray went into an absolute godlike mode this series. Turned on a mode that I don't think any of us thought he had.
No, he was locked in.
Exactly. In game one, Donovan Mitchell kind of opened up another area in his game that we didn't really think was possible. I didn't think he could put up that many points in a playoff game. And just seeing these two make each other better, thriving off the rivalry, it's great. And yeah. I do think that Mitchell's a little bit better because I think he plays a little better defense. I think he plays a little more heart. His shooting's just a little bit better than Murray's. I think Murray has
I think he might be a better playmaker, too.
Agreed. He does pass the ball a little bit better. And I think he's blossomed into someone we can finally call a good NBA player. Because Mitchell had a great rookie year, kind of fell off a little bit after that. But now they're both competing at a level that you see young all-star players play at.
Yeah.
What do you think, Luke?
In terms of this series, okay, so first of all, I had an article come out, I wrote about breakout players in the NBA, and I did not put Murray on this list. This was the night before Murray first dropped 50.
Oh, no.
And so I'm watching this game after I send this article, and I'm like,
because
I was thinking, I was like, on this arc, I'm like, I could put either Donovan Mitchell or Jamal Murray on it. You know, I think I think Utah is going to win this series. I think Donovan Mitchell is a better player. We'll go Mitchell. And then freaking Murray just comes out and lightning in a bottle, just boom, absolutely takes control. But I'm kicking myself a little bit for not putting him on because he absolutely deserves recognition for his incredible performance in that series. But I do think that Mitchell is still the better player because he's more consistent in his scoring. So he was he is the points leader, points per game in this NBA playoff bubble. He's led all players in points scored. He consistently puts his team on the back, whereas Murray isn't as consistent with his game-changing abilities. Now, he's still an incredible talent, but Mitchell just does it more and more consistently. So if Murray can become that number two on the Nuggets, they're finally taking their last step to becoming a potential title team. Because like Caleb and I were talking about this in podcast past, what do the Nuggets need to succeed? They need a number two to Jokic's one. And if Murray can become that number two, that team has a real shot to compete in the finals. Now, I think what you're seeing in these players is a product of this situation, I think. Donovan Mitchell came in and he was told, you have to be the number one scorer. You have to come in and be Michael Jordan, essentially. Whereas Murray, he had more time to get groomed. He's like, oh, you see, you have all these amazing players around you. You've got Jokic, you've got Harris, you got so many other great players. You know, you can take your time. And so this is just a guess, but my educated guess is that these two players are a product of their situations And that feeds into their consistency, specifically more with Murray than with Mitchell, in terms of that he's able to go at his own pace. So he's not exactly pushed, kind of like a bird falling out of their nest being forced to fly. Mitchell was forced to fly, whereas Murray is able to take his time. Now, time will tell which of these players is going to be better in the end. But right here, right now, I would still go with Mitchell.
I think you're completely correct. And Mitchell hasn't had as much. If I'm correct, Mitchell is newer in the league than Murray is, right? So Murray's had more time to develop, too.
They got drafted in the same year, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. Edit that one out.
Mitchell, I think Mitchell might be a year older.
There are a couple of juniors, third-year players.
All right.
Yeah, if memory serves me correctly. Yes.
Yeah. Do you guys want to talk at all about the Clippers? I feel like it might be bad not to mention them at all.
Clippers?
Yeah, or just anything out west. I mean, we talked about the Rockets and Lakers for a second, but...
Nah, frick those guys. Okay. Lakers is the only team that matters.
You guys think the Lakers, or who do you feel is better, the Lakers or Clippers?
Luke and I have talked about this a lot.
Yeah, I figured, but I haven't heard what you guys
said. I know. Wasn't me getting on you. I was just saying that viewers listening will know how Luke and I feel about the Clippers. Luke leans towards Clippers. I lean towards Lakers because I love LeBron. Okay. But I'll let Luke say his piece about the Clippers just because I've raved about the Lakers a little too much.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to lie. The Clippers are looking a bit more human than I thought they would. Part of that is inconsistency from Paul George. I think that's the big difference. He's still a really good defender, delegator, scorer, but he's not the number two superstar that we thought he would come across as. So
At least right now.
So, Lakers, they have Rondo back. And watched them last night. They played pretty good against the Rockets. They still got beat. But in terms of LeBron absolutely trashing his opponents, did you guys see that transition bucket he blocked? I think it was.
Oh, that was awesome.
On Westbrook.
He blocks Westbrook, takes it, freaking zero steps, and one.
Yeah, and one.
Did you see the dunk on Westbrook?
Yeah, he blocked Westbrook. He blocked Westbrook at least two times, too. He had something out for him last night.
Yeah, he was.
Lakers might have got beat, but don't tell me LeBron didn't play his darndest yesterday. Because he's been criticized in the past for, delegating to Anthony Davis and not being that number one guy, not playing with heart. He's too old. He's washed up. Everything. But LeBron played with a lot of heart last night. He played great defense, which he has been crucially criticized about in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think last night wasn't on LeBron. It was on the role players. They didn't have really anyone behind them. And when LeBron and Anthony Davis went to the bench players didn't perform.
Yeah.
Definitely. I do think the Lakers will be fine. I think they still win this series. I just think that maybe it goes 6 or 7 now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I feel like all season we've been waiting for Lakers Clippers, and I think that's what we're gonna get.
And we're finally gonna get it.
I think the Clippers sweep. I think the Clippers sweep right now.
See, the Clippers.
They might.
Sweep.
They are looking good.
Here's what I'll say. If Kyle Kuzma takes a step forward and becomes not necessarily Jamal Murray level, but if he is able to consistently contribute 15 to 20 points a night, I will give the edge to the Lakers. If Paul George continues to underperform, I think that the Lakers have a real shot of taking him. And just Kuzma chipping in a couple points a night, 15 to 20. Yeah, no, that's a couple points. Yeah, right, Luke. But they're just so close from being so great because LeBron's going to be LeBron no matter what. He's very consistent. He's a really great player. He can turn it on whenever he wants to. And you saw that last night. He's still a great player, and even though everybody's like, look at Giannis, look at Doncic, LeBron is still LeBron. LeBron is still the king of the NBA right now.
Love you for saying that.
He's still the best player in the NBA.
Say what?
Go ahead, Kayla.
I love you for saying that, Luke, that LeBron's still the king.
I speak facts as well as opinions. LeBron's still LeBron. He's still going to be a great player. Next year will come when next year comes. But right here, right now, we're still looking at one of the elite talents in the NBA. And as well as one of the postseason elite talents. He always performs during crunch time very well.
Mm-hmm.
So the Lakers do have a shot. I don't think they'll get swept. I think, I don't know what you're smoking, but I definitely don't think they'll get swept. There's no
You don't
way.
Think the Nuggets will get swept? Or the Lakers.
Or Lakers. I'm assuming that's what you meant. That's what you
No, I meant the Clippers were sweeping the Nuggets. I said the Nuggets have no chance.
I think the Nuggets will win one or two games because they just got off a grueling series against the Jazz. They're gonna drop the first game no matter what. There's no way they're winning that. Mm-hmm. Unless the stars align and they just rain three pointers, which I doubt. But I think they'll take a game or two. I don't think
they'll. Yeah, I think they'll probably get a game in. But I don't see it going any more than that, really. The Clippers are just too deep.
A quick question I wanted to ask maybe before we get off is, if Porzingis hadn't gotten hurt, do you think the Mavericks go and take that series, at least seven games, or take the series in a whole?
I think it goes to seven, and then from there we don't know. I mean, in a game seven with Luka, that would be his first career game seven. But then we've also seen what Kawhi has done in those type of situations, so that would have been fun to see. But I think with Porzingis, either with Porzingis healthy or if he doesn't get ejected in game one, either way, I think that maybe makes it go seven.
Yeah, you know, we don't know. Maybe that pressure makes Paul George come out of his shell. I don't know, but I would.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
I would have loved to see it. Oh my gosh!
I love Luka. Yeah,
seeing Luka in Game Seven would have been incredible too.
We'll can see dream. Yeah, we'll have yeah. We have this entire career ahead of us.
Yeah.
Our insatiable appetites for elite basketball will be quenched. Yes,
for sure.
Okay. Anything else, boys?
I think I'm good. Yeah.
Charles, do you want to let our viewers know where they can find you at on social media?
Yeah, so you can check out my articles. Like I said earlier, I'm writing for Scarlet and Game, We Love Ann Arbor, and you can also find some of my articles for Prep Hoops. You can just go on my Twitter. It's at Chaz, C-H-A-S, underscore post 23. Sweet. I post all my stories on there, so just check them out there.
And I think all of your articles are still up on the Echo site, just deeper into the back quite a ways, but if you do want to check Charles's old stuff out, you can still go to the Echo page,
easternecho.com/sports. page three and over probably, and then you'll probably see some. Chaz, thanks again for coming on the
podcast. Thank you, man.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you guys, it was great.
As our second honorary guest, we're out here two for two with amazing guests. We're gonna have more on soon as well, so thanks again, appreciate it.
Yeah, great, thanks guys.
That's going to do it for today's episode, guys. If you like what we do here, please make sure to rate and subscribe the podcast. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Luke Greban. That's LukeGreban.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Caleb Burlingame, CalebBurlingame.
From my bedroom, I'm Luke Greban.
And from my bedroom, I'm Caleb Burlingame.
Saying thank you for washing your hands and staying 6 feet apart. This has been
The Factory Report.
Ba-da!
Awesome. Sweet. Good job, guys.
Cut it. Mail it.
Nice.
Yes.
That was fun.